to the ADHDer in that moment, the interruption feels cataclysmic. It feels like it's jarred our whole nervous system because we've taken our focus away from this magical zone of making connections and creating ideas and getting somewhere strategically in our brains, no matter what the task is we're doing. And we need that momentum and we need that hyper focus without any distractions in order to build on what we're creating. And sometimes when that is shattered, it can feel like everything is lost all at once in our all or nothing thinking. And that can feel really physically painful and frustrating. Hello, you're listening to the Future ADHD podcast, and I'm your host, Grace Coolmer. And it's been a minute since I brought you something new. We are in the middle of a mini series all about diving deep into some of the most commonly talked about ADHD traits. And in the last episode, we covered hyperfocus, and I am still pondering and thinking about this. So I wanted to do an extra episode where we dive into hyperfocus even more, because I wanted to talk about two big things that I didn't cover in the last episode. And those are what it means to be in flight mode, and digging into an example that I've kind of been contemplating all about big long-haul flights and 747 planes and how that relates to the ADHD brain. So if you're curious, definitely keep listening. But also, I want to talk about this other phenomenon that I've discovered in my travels around the internet that I read an article about 6 months ago, and it's just stuck with me. And the article was all about this phenomenon of the fear of being interrupted. And I resonated with it so strongly that I thought I need to do a podcast episode on this. So that's what I'm doing today. Strap yourselves in and let's go. Life with an ADHD brain can be a wild ride, swinging between intense obsessions and hyperfocus to exhaustion and overwhelm. And sometimes these pendulum swings can feel very lonely in a world that doesn't truly understand neurodiversity. But what if our daydreaming, impulsivity, and fierce obsessions all make complete sense? What if appreciating and validating the ADHD way of thinking helps us unhook from self-shaming narratives and realize we are needed in this world? What if we asked not just what is ADHD, but why is ADHD? And if the answer to that changed everything? Believe me, I know firsthand that living with an ADHD brain isn't easy, and we'll definitely talk about those challenges here too. But after decades focusing on the deficits, it's time for a shift. Join me for a liberating, science-backed deep dive into topics like habits and productivity, reframing limiting beliefs, mindset, relationship to self, and nervous system nourishment. This is the Future ADHD podcast, where we challenge the status quo, change the conversation, and shape the future of ADHD together. So hyperfocus, we covered a lot last week all about the quality of hyperfocus, how it's, I think, somewhat misunderstood, or at least there's a lot yet to be learned about hyperfocus, because it often gets portrayed as almost this dysfunction, this difficulty, this inconvenience, and sometimes it definitely can be. But I think taking a step back and really looking at why hyperfocus, not just what it is, but why it exists, and starting to think about the brain of an ADHDer and how it's uniquely designed and evolved to do certain things really well. And one of those is hyperfocus. And I guess if you don't value hyperfocus, if you're somebody making comments, you're an ADHD, possibly in the neurotypical space, who from the outside looking in looks and says, well, hyperfocus is inconvenient. Maybe you're a school teacher and it's really disruptive to your lessons when students are not listening. I can see that it would sort of get a bit of a bad label and a negative stigma. But hyperfocus is magic, and it's not only magic, it is necessary. It is how our brains evolved to thrive and to be doing what we're made to do. Just like looking at the diversity in the animal kingdom and seeing a cheetah at full sprint chasing a wildebeest, and you know that that animal is meant to run that fast and it's meant to hunt in that way. And our brains are the same. We are meant to do certain things, and I want to talk about that today. The first big idea is this idea of ADHD as in flight mode. I had a sudden epiphany when I was thinking about the physiological experience of being inside my body when I suddenly get inspired to dive into something and I sort of hit that hyperfocus rhythm or that building of momentum. And I was saying this to my husband and trying to explain it to him, how it feels in my brain, how it feels in my body. And I said, it sort of feels like I'm a plane taking off and I have to build up this momentum in order to get this big 747 jet up into high altitudes, cruising it at high altitudes and flying long distances. And so when I use all this energy to get myself off the ground, I love to be at altitude flying undisturbed for long periods of time. I don't want to go into hyperfocus mode and have to, you know, be interrupted and have to come out an hour after I kind of get into that deep flow state, that creative zone. And so I started teasing apart this analogy of a plane. And as I did, I realized it perfectly explains the ADHD experience. So stick with me. I'm going to run you through my thinking about this and show you how much it helped me understand myself and my brain and why I work the way I do. And it also helped me prioritize even further. I'd already started prioritizing time to hyperfocus. I'd started working my work schedule around periods of hyperfocus. And also I'd started reframing the moments that I wasn't productive as the opposite of hyperfocus and why those were necessary, but also why those kind of led to hyperfocus. And so I started looking at the whole picture a bit differently, all because I started seeing myself like a brain that likes to go on long haul flights and be in flight mode. So let's take it all back to imagining getting on a long haul flight from one continent to another and imagining a 747 jet on the runway waiting to find out which destination it's flying to. Now, of course, planes know where they're flying to. So in this example, let's imagine in the ADHD brain that we're on the runway, but we don't actually know where we want to fly to yet. And you probably identify, if you've been on a long haul flight or any flight for that matter, that when you get on the plane, everyone's kind of in this agitated, ready to get in the sky kind of mindset. All the passengers are just sort of ready to get to the destination. And so that taxiing feeling that you get when you're a passenger on a plane is actually, like, I often feel, at least, you know, ready to be in the sky. I feel a bit impatient. I feel a little bit bored of taxiing on the runway, of how slowly the plane has to creep along and wait at certain points. And the pilot's obviously communicating with the tower, waiting for clearance to fly. But that feeling of agitation translates really well to the feeling that ADHDers get when we haven't got something to hyperfocus on, when everything is shallow, when we're taxiing through our lives and we are constantly waiting for something to capture our attention and we're actually waiting to find out which destination we're going to be heading for, because we don't want to just gear up our engines and start building momentum and speed and heading towards nothing. And so we are sort of taxiing, and this is how I feel, that I'm taxiing around my life, waiting for a ping of curiosity or a ping of inspiration. And then as soon as that happens, impulsively, without waiting for clearance from any tower, often, I will just suddenly take off once I have my coordinates set and my destination locked in. So that's the first thing, the taxiing feeling and that feeling of impatience and agitation. And often it's something you can't quite put your finger on. It's like an unconscious feeling in the background. It can manifest as anxiety. It can manifest as boredom. And I think all of those things are necessary. The taxiing state is actually really necessary. And understanding its necessity in terms of almost being ready for a project to pop up, being ready for something to for our brains to feed on is important. And I guess as well, like as I'm giving these examples, some of them, it'll be obvious that in real life, you know, taxiing around can start to feel a bit mundane, and then, you know, going into hyperfocus at the drop of a hat isn't always practical, but it is how we are built and have evolved to thrive. And it is how our brains, you know, are still around. Otherwise we would have been sort of like phased out during evolution if this didn't work. So obviously it's good for something. And so just really leaning into that is important as I go through this example. So where was I? So I receive my ping, I get my coordinates, my destination's locked in. All of a sudden, I can't predict when that's going to happen. And that's the other thing about hyperfocus, that it can just strike like lightning. And I think as well, when it does strike and you're in a position where you can't chase that urge, it is grueling and it's like gears grinding. It is such an uncomfortable feeling. It's like a plane that's just wanting to take off and can't. So that's definitely worth mentioning. But if you do have permission, or if you do just sort of take off anyway, whether or not you have permission, the plane will then gather speed and intensity. And as it's flying down the runway at high speed, it's unstoppable. So getting that high speed up is crucial. And then when it takes off, long haul flights are generally in the air for anywhere between 4 and 18 hours at a time, depending on how far they're flying. And that is hyperfocus. It's that feeling of leaving Earth and flying up above the Earth to a place where you're creative, where you're strategic, where you're following your passions, you're making connections, you're seeing the big vision, you can see the detail at the same time, and you're in your field of, I guess, genius, depending on what that is. It could be different for everyone. It might be structural or engineering. It could be creative, artistry, music, writing. It could be creative problem solving, thinking about strategic direction of a whole company. There are so many ways that this can manifest. It could be, you know, video gaming. It could be designing video games. The list goes on. But whatever you're doing when you're in that hyperfocused state, you've left the planet. You're in your own time zone. And you're flying at these incredibly high altitudes. And that's when we go into flight mode as ADHDers. Just like on a normal flight, you put your phone in flight mode and you're uncontactable, unless you're flying business class, and then you probably have some high-tech way of being able to contact people down on Earth. But in general, when you're flying in economy, you don't have contact with the outside world. So you're on this long-haul flight, and the other crucial thing about long-haul flights is that you need to have fuel and food on board to last the journey, and that also applies to our experience as ADHDers. When we go into hyper-focus and we don't bring food or water or fuel with us, we very quickly burn out of energy. So it's really important to make sure that if we're going to go on a high altitude journey for a while in hyperfocus, that we bring all of the provisions we need to get through. Then we get to the idea of the pilot in the cockpit flying this plane, and the importance of making sure the pilot is not distracted becomes really, really crucial, because we've got the plane off the ground, but now that we're flying through the sky, you know, no one would argue with the fact that a pilot can't be distracted while flying. And ADHD brains are exactly the same. When we are in hyperfocus mode and we're distracted, when something pulls our attention, it's as dangerous, or as it feels as dangerous, as a pilot being distracted. And even though it may not be physically dangerous, even though from the outside looking in, it's just like, you know, well, I came in to ask if you want dinner, or, you know, maybe you can hear a dog barking next door or kids in the background, whatever it might be, to the ADHDer in that moment, the interruption feels cataclysmic. It feels like it's jarred our whole nervous system, because we've taken our focus away from this magical zone of making connections and creating ideas and getting somewhere strategically in our brains, no matter what the task is we're doing. And we need that momentum, and we need that hyper focus without any distractions in order to to build on what we're creating. And sometimes when that is shattered, it can feel like everything is lost all at once in our all or nothing thinking. And that can feel really physically painful and frustrating. Just like an ordinary flight as well, hyperfocus sessions can't just end. And when they're interrupted and there's no resolution, when we're dragged away, we can feel really out of sorts for a long time afterwards. So I'm not trying to say that, you know, we should have a perfect world in which every hyperfocus session is never interrupted, but I'm speaking about the nuances here, and I'm really trying to tease apart each stage of the experience because it's helped me extraordinarily understand why my body feels the way it does if I'm ripped out of a hyperfocus session. And it's really helped me understand how sometimes I know I have a project to do, like this podcast episode. I've known I've had to record this for a few weeks now, and I haven't been able to get in the zone because I didn't have a destination in mind. I didn't have all my coordinates clear. And so I was taxiing around the runway. And then as soon as everything came into focus for me and the conditions were just right, I just went boom into hyperfocus, recording this episode that you can hear now. And as I finish recording this episode, I will do things that are very similar to the way a plane lands. So instead of just abruptly finishing, walking out of the room and going and having dinner, I will probably still be thinking about things, adding little bits here or there, or listening back to the recording to check it. And that is why ADHDers struggle with transition, because if we've been in hyperfocus, we actually need to give ourselves time to slowly descend even after we've finished the intellectual or creative period of that hyperfocus. We need to give ourselves time to adjust back into reality and to get into this time zone that everyone else is in. And that's how jet lag plays into this example so beautifully, that often when you travel long distances, you've been up in the air in a different kind of time zone and traveling so fast. And when you arrive at a new place, you're really disoriented. And that's how it can feel for an ADHDer emerging from their cave, from their creative space, from their world, is that we can be really disoriented and find transitions really challenging. So it's really crucial to think about how to create a smooth landing for ourselves and maybe create a buffer if we know we have time to work on a project for several hours at a time, to actually create a buffer at the end where we don't have to just go back into our lives, where we can slowly adjust back in. And if we're driving or catching a train to and from work or to or from an environment where we've been hyper-focusing, that can really help because that really gives us that buffer that we need. If we are designed as a 747 jet, that a lot of our life is structured around moments where we can hyperfocus, where we can let out that energy and get into a different time zone, flying at high altitudes, doing what we love. If we're not doing that, if we're not allowing ourselves that opportunity, it is actually unhealthy and it's really going to agitate our nervous systems. Just like if you had a big 747 jet who's only chartering 1 hour flights or 20 minute joyrides, it wouldn't make any sense to get a plane of that size up into the air only for 20 minutes. And so it's really important, if we're built to do this, to actually let ourselves do it. Another thing is that sometimes we get stuck taxiing for a very long time without a destination. And that can be linked to a bunch of different reasons, to do with life seasons, to do with transitions and changes. Perhaps, you know, if you're the single mother or father of children and you have dependents, you're not going to get a lot of opportunity to. Sometimes it might be the career that you find yourself in. It might be health-related reasons or other comorbidities alongside your ADHD that prevent you from really having the energy to focus on things. And that is something definitely to take into consideration. But if those things don't apply to you and you're still feeling agitated, like you don't really get to chew on the really meaty goodness that can come from a deep dive into something that isn't interrupted, this might be a reason why you're feeling so out of alignment and so irritated. And it's definitely worth thinking about if that's the case. The other factor to consider, of course, is that when we are taxiing around and something suddenly piques our interest, the sudden takeoff, the sudden, you know, high speed flying into the sky feeling is very disorienting for the people around us. And especially if we have kids as well, that can be difficult. So yeah, I think that it's really just a matter of being able to talk with your loved ones about this, and in your workplaces too, having open conversations with your higher ups and your bosses about what environmental supports would be required and what you need in order to function the best way that you can. I don't have time to get into all of that in this episode. I have talked a bit about workplace accommodations in previous episodes, so definitely check those out. But yeah, I think it is something that's worth considering, that just because this is the way that we have evolved and are designed to be, it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy to live in a world that is more structured and more planned and predictable, because taking flights spontaneously, it is unpredictable and it can cause some chaos. But the ability to be able to impulsively jump into something is something that ADHDers are good at as well. And there are huge benefits to being able to see an idea and very quickly be able to take action on it and carve out the time to build a huge library of work around something, or a huge portfolio, or a physical kind of manifestation of what you're interested in. And even if we move on to other hyperfocuses, like I mentioned in the last episode, everything is always so valuable. The things that we learn, we often come back to weeks, months, years later. And so we're really building these layers and these foundations on which each new passion that we have is built. And it means that when we start to focus on things, we think very deeply about the other things that we have focused deeply on. And so we start to make really big connections between things, because the areas and topics that we're interested in, we have dived so deeply in. We have a lot to explore, which makes being ADHD really fun. And it means that if you're in a creative industry or an industry that really values those skills of creativity and analysis and innovation, it means that we are perfectly designed for those industries. But being in industries that really value predictability and deadlines and the same thing over and over, we can be completely a square peg in a round hole and can get really unwell and depressed and listless and just not ourselves. We're not living to our potential, I guess, and we're not using our skills in the way that they could be used. So now I want to ask you, have you ever been on a plane that's been redirected mid-flight to another destination, or even grounded due to an emergency? And if you have, I'm sure you'll know how disruptive it is. And let's not talk about the sort of scenarios where things are actually, you know, your life is in danger. Let's just talk about a fairly practical reason for having to turn around. Perhaps it's sort of more of a clerical error. Perhaps the airport doesn't actually have room for you and you have to go somewhere else. That feeling is really the feeling of your flight, the smooth transition to a new destination being interrupted is really jarring. And I want to really do a deep dive on this fear of being interrupted and share some of the things I've been pondering around why this is such a phenomenon among ADHDers in particular. I first came across this concept of the fear of being interrupted in an article by Ellen Vrana on her blog, The Examined Life. So the article is called The Fear of Being Interrupted. And in this article, Ellen talks about and sort of draws on the literature around the idea of being interrupted. And she quotes Lynn Sharon Schwartz, who says a beautiful quote about this fear in a book that she wrote. So the quote is, "I contracted a phobia for which there is no name, the fear of being interrupted. It may also be why, as I grew up, I came to prefer reading late at night when the intrusive world has gone to bed. Sometimes at the peak of intoxicating pleasures, I am visited by panic. The phone or a doorbell will ring, someone will need me or demand I do something. Of course, I needn't answer or oblige, but that is beside the point. The spell would have been broken." Reflecting on that quote, Ellen Vrana writes that being interrupted is more than losing thoughts or to-do lists. It can feel like we lose a part of ourselves. Or worse, that part is destroyed, she writes. And I really resonated with that. And even though that article wasn't written about ADHDers, I do feel like it's so perfectly illustrated the intense aversion we have to being interrupted to the point of panic at times and the huge impact it has on us when it happens. Some of the ways that we can be interrupted while we're focusing are, as Sharon wrote, a doorbell, visitors, deliveries, but it can also be things like the voices of others in an open plan office. It could be compulsory meetings that sort of interrupt the whole flow of your day. It could be children or the voices of children in the background, or children physically coming into the room, or other people that you live with or are in your office coming into your office space. It could be notifications, emails, social media notifications or pop-ups. It could be phone calls. And of course, it could also just be outside noise and noise of construction workers, for instance, traffic, that kind of thing. And depending on when I'm interrupted and how I'm interrupted, I actually find that I can vary in some very intense emotions that I haven't really heard anyone talking about. And I really want to sort of just talk about so that it's more normalized, I guess. So when I'm interrupted in flow, I can often feel angry. I can feel that I want to run away or escape the interruption. I want to be alone in solitude and have this really strong pining urge for it to be physically, very geographically removed from the place I'm currently in. I can feel the need for silence. I can crave quiet time to read, particularly in the mornings to start my day with that uninterrupted time. I can also find that I'm more prone to revenge bedtime, so that is staying up way later than I need to, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., because at nighttime I'm uninterrupted. There are far fewer distractions and I just get long periods of time where I can focus on things and be undisturbed. It can also show up as anxiety or depression. And the way that that can look is with depression, you can have a sense of that there's no point starting anything because I never have any time to myself. And you don't get time to yourself, you can sometimes just feel like there's a helplessness or a futility, and you can get tired of fighting, you can get tired of trying to create space to tell people not to disturb you, and you can give up. And that feeling has definitely happened to me, particularly when I'm trying to do something that's really important to me and I keep getting disturbed. I'd rather not do it at all than do it in a way that is unsatisfying or when I can't do my best work. You can also just get pure anxiety where you are sitting in a space that you have fought hard for, that you have asked boundaries around, and you still are worried that if you get into your flow state and you start, you know, you get into that high altitude cruising space and you're on flight mode, that people will still disrespect that. So you can have this underlying agitation and nervousness that prevents you from really being able to take off. It's also not just physical interruptions in the environment around us. I am often interrupted by my own guilt and worry about the fact that I'm not spending more time with my children, or that my husband has to take the children so I can do something and then he gets less time to himself, or I'm interrupted by guilt when someone calls that I really need to talk to, maybe my parents or a family member that I can't speak to them at that point because I'm in the middle of a hyper-focus session, but the guilt kind of still interrupts me. I am also interrupted by sometimes just a natural addiction to check social media, to check notifications that's conditioned into me. So I might even have created myself a space and vowed that I won't be distracted and no one will distract me. And then I will go and distract myself by checking social media, which is one of the most frustrating elements of it that I could, you know, I know how to do better, but I just can't seem to in that instance at times. So I've talked about a lot in this episode, but I just want to finish by exploring what is hyperfocus and its relationship to creativity? In his book, The Courage to Create, Rollo May talks about the creative's hyperfocus tendency as an encounter that we enter into with intensity, abandon, and total absorption. And as we enter hyperfocus or take off on our long-haul flight, physiological changes happen in our body and brain that signal that we are entering into that state of focus. So we get a quickened heart rate, higher blood pressure, increased intensity and constriction of our vision, with our eyelids narrowed so we can more clearly see the detail in the work we're doing. We also become oblivious to things around us, so our ears are able to filter out noise at times, and we're sort of unaware of the passage of time or interoceptive cues in our body to go to the bathroom or to eat food. And so all of those physiological signs create an incubator, create a cone of silence, I guess, that can really help us hyperfocus. And it's only when certain sounds or certain types of distractions filtrate through and blast their way through that we're really distracted, because often we can actually filter out some of that background noise if it's not too extreme or too out of the ordinary. So we can maybe filter out the babbling noise of our children in the background, but if there's a high-pitched scream or a cry, that might be much harder to filter out, because there's also that emotion attached of worrying about what might have happened. If there's a loud crash, you might get distracted because you think, well, did someone get hurt, and rush out of the room. Rollo May also wrote in his book, The Courage to Create, that not having creative encounters or being drawn into satisfying hyperfocus moments can create agitation and anxiety, which is what I mentioned earlier. But it is fascinating to read that in literature and to realize that it is such a crucial motor functioning for our brains. So the final question I have in this exploration, this deeper exploration of hyperfocus, is why do we need so long? Why do we need hours and hours and hours? Why can't our work be done in shorter amounts of time? I noted down some thoughts I have on this, but I'm sure there are so many ways of looking at this question. So I'm sure as I speak, things will come up for you as well in your experience. But for me, it started with the idea that good things take time, that if we are working on things that are really important to us, if we're innovating, if we're being creative, if we're writing, if we're designing new products or thinking about new ways of looking at the world, these are things that take time. They are hard-won efforts. They're not something that happens in an instant. And in a world where we are increasingly having shorter attention spans and we increasingly expect online shopping orders to be delivered same day or the next day, I think it's really beautiful that ADHD minds are like this, that we like to take our time and that we have the patience, the stamina, and the motivation to endure long periods of focus. ADHDers also have a natural tendency towards thinking about deep, existential, or complex things. And that takes time to process in our brains. Those topics are the big topics, the things that we like to chew on across a lifetime as well. And so these are things that we need the time and space to ponder and contemplate. And that is also why, I guess, with this podcast, that sometimes there'll be weeks between episodes, because I haven't yet found a way to switch on my brain and have it create an episode every week without fail. The things that I want to bring to the world, the things like this episode, I'm cooking up and processing and really sitting on for quite a while before I'm able to bring them through the microphone into your world. And I think that's just one of the benefits of how our brains work, but also one of the inconveniences, because it makes it really hard to stay consistent with a schedule like podcasting. A final thing I wanted to say about why we need so long to consider different topics or to hyperfocus on different passions or interest areas is the idea of ambiguity. So in his book, ADHD, A Hunter in a Farmer's World, Tom Hartman writes, ADHDers have a high tolerance for ambiguity. Because their attention wanders easily, they can often see a situation from several perspectives at once, noticing facets or solutions that may not have been obvious to other people. This process takes time, and I 100% agree with that. I think that often I will spend a long time on something because I am constantly shifting perspectives as I consider it, and I don't want to rush that process. So I'll finish this episode with some questions for you, the listener. As you process everything I've just said and how that relates to your life, and consider whether it resonates for you and to what extent it does resonate. So my first question is, what is it that you want to do but don't have time for? And a follow-up question, how does not having time for that thing make you feel? Maybe you try and you get interrupted and become frustrated. Maybe you've tried doing it and hyper-focusing and you were interrupted so often that now you don't even let yourself start or let your brain go there because you're afraid of being interrupted and it just feels too pointless. Maybe you even know what you want to do and you've tried, but you're afraid of failing or not being able to do it justice because your situation doesn't currently allow it. And that is a really significant point that, as I mentioned before, there are seasons of life that just aren't right for being able to work on things because we just wouldn't be able to do them justice. And knowing when you're in those seasons that your time will come and that it won't always be like that is so crucial, because otherwise we can just feel like we want to give up. There are definitely seasons and careers that are more conducive to hyperfocus. And maybe for you, it has been so long since you've had the freedom to do that. Maybe you're a single parent, or maybe the situations in your life with caring for other people, caring for people with disabilities or less able than yourself, mean that you haven't had the chance to go there. Maybe you're constantly taxiing on the runway. And my advice would be, wherever possible, to find ways to prioritize hyperfocus and create space for that and really reframe it as being something that, like a marathon runner needs to run a marathon and like a pilot needs to fly a long-haul flight in a 747 jet, we need to do what our brains are really good at and just let them be in that state because it's healthy. I think it detoxes our brains. I think it keeps us regulated in our nervous systems, and it helps us show up in more regulated ways in the rest of our environment, particularly doing things that are low dopamine, that are boring, admin tasks, tax, looking after young children when our brains might want to do other things, giving ourselves that space for ourselves, for our brains is, I think, one of the highest priorities. So maybe right now you don't see how you'd be able to do that. And I guess a couple of ideas are long-term considering transitioning towards a career like writing, fields of innovation, self-employment, maybe a remote job that allows you to have less physical office connections or workplace connections and be able to work on your own timelines and in your own hourly kind of schedules. Maybe you keep the same job, but you budget for childcare if you have kids, or time away from your dependents or responsibilities, and give yourself retreat time as a matter of priority and necessity, because it feeds your soul and it helps keep you regulated. If you have any feedback on this episode, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. hello@futureadhd.com. And I will be bringing you another episode very soon, so stick around. And if you haven't listened to my previous episodes, definitely head back and check those out. There are some juicy topics in there that I've already covered around this idea of hyperfocus and impulsivity and interacting with our worlds and being inconsistent and all that good stuff. Thanks so much for joining me for today's episode. If you learned more about yourself while listening, I'd love to know. Take a screenshot and share it on your socials so I can cheer you on, or leave a rating and review. It helps other people find this podcast. And while you're waiting for my next episode, don't forget there's lots of good stuff over on our Instagram at future.adhd, including our incredibly popular planners. Our science-based ADHD planners are designed specifically for the inconsistency of the ADHD brain, making it easy to jump back in, even if you miss weeks or months at a time, without the shame spirals, guilt, or critical self-talk. Join more than 40,000 neurodivergents who have bought our ADHD planner and say that this is the first organizational tool they've ever been able to stick with. Head to futureadhd.com to pick your color. This episode of the Future ADHD podcast was edited and mastered by Sam from Shred Session Studios. Oh, and one final thing before you go. If you're anything like me, finishing a podcast episode and transitioning back into the real world can grind my brain gears. So I've asked my producer Sam to add binaural beats to my outro track. Binaural music has been shown to help cleanse and relax ADHD brains by stimulating and synchronizing both hemispheres of the brain. So close your eyes, sit back, and enjoy these binaural beats as you transition to your next task for the day. This is the future of ADHD.